Oh, hey, Kate.
What?
Yes.
What did you say?
I said, oh, hey, Kate.
Oh my God, I thought you said, oh, I hate Kate. And I was like, Kate, who? Me? Little town, it's a quiet village every day, like the one before. Little town full of little people waking up to say, I hate Kate. So my dream last night, no good story starts with, okay, so in my dream last night, but here we go. I was in a musical about
Like you
like
do.
the American Revolution or something, because I fall asleep every night to the world's longest book on Lyndon Johnson, which has nothing to do with the American Revolution, but still, I'm seeped in American history as I fall asleep every night. Lyndon Johnson was a dick to Lady Bird. Like a dick, but still an interesting, very important, figure in American history to study. Anyways, neither here nor there. I dreamt I was in a musical and I had this big costume on. And my job was like, I was sort of a funny character that came on and was just like, no! Like, that's all I had to do was sing a couple words in a huge operetta, like, just funny moment. And in every dream I have like these, I don't know my lines. And the entire cast stops and looks at me and goes, Kate, because they mean to say, Kate, it's your turn. And I'm like, I know it's my turn, but I don't know my lines.
And then it's just a
And then there's
standoff.
just silence. And like my family's in the audience, like embarrassed for me. And then I just start singing and walk off stage. Like I keep having this dream that I am ill-equipped for the for what's on my plate. And I actually think this might have to do with taking on like teaching meditation classes. That has to be it. Like I'm like, ooh,
I'm wondering what it has to do with Lyndon Johnson. This is really what I'm wondering.
and yeah, so I don't know, but I think I need to get back into community theater, and that's what I'm most looking forward to when the when enough people have been vaccinated, I get to go back to community theater, making locals uncomfortable.
I'm
It's all for
picturing
charity.
Kate on a blank stage with just one pin spot as she gives a rousing rendition of I'm Still Here.
Ryan, we have a lot to talk about. It's been a while since we've recorded. How
Accurate.
are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. I'm hanging in there. I am excited to be able to. I mean, I guess I was able to previously, but now I feel much more comfortable going back to doing body work again. I just got my second shot on. What is today? Today is Friday. So I did that on Monday, which still feels like it was like 3 months ago, but it was just 4 days ago, right? So so that's exciting. It did knock me on my ass on both Monday and Tuesday. That second shot was I feel like don't it, like everyone tells you like what the second shot it feels like, and then like nobody actually has exactly the same response to it, because I was like, I'm doing fine, and then I like was just like, oh, I have to lie down now. Oh, I have to lie down now. And then like 3 hours later I was fine, and then I was like, oh, I'm in the clear, I must be good. And then like it the like waves continued to hit me on like Tuesday throughout the day. So it wasn't like one sustained period of like reaction. It was like, oh, I'm doing great now. And then like, oh, not so great. Oh, not good, not working.
You literally are describing exactly what I feel every day.
Yeah.
Like a, I'm trying not to pivot this to me. I'm just like, what you described is so on point for like waking up and I'm like, I'm okay. I'm feeling all right. And then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, okay. I got to sit down. I just got to sit. I just got maybe lay down. I just got to lay down for a second. And then I like recalibrate a little bit and move on with the next task. And then another wave comes through. That's interesting. How, yeah. Did you experience like fevers and pain?
It was a little achy, but no fever throughout the whole thing. But,
how do you feel now that you've done it? Now that you have the microchip, Ryan?
Now that I have the microchip and can be tracked everywhere I go. I feel fine.
Now that you have the eye of Sauron coursing through your blood.
But the thing, I'll tell you one thing that I'm not doing is planning my next vacation yoga retreat in Greece for October of 2021, which I'm already starting to see pop up. And I'm just like...
Is it in Santorini? There's a really special place in my heart for Santorini. I don't know if you've been, but it's like... It's not even of this world. I don't know who this character is, but they can afford to go to Santorini a lot.
Fair. Just on a whim. It's like it's a Thursday. I feel like a jaunt
to Santorini. Yeah, no, why do you feel so angry about people enjoying their life?
Because I hate joy. I can't take credit for that one. That was something that I think it was Sokrati, who's been on the show before, said once, just in a moment of funny. And now Fez and a lot of people will just say to me, Ryan, why do you hate joy?
why do you? What is it about people just trying to make a living bringing yoga to other people in tropical, usually locations where people have historically not had access to the same thing that the vacationers who sojourn? I mean, you don't want to go on a carnival cruise to Labadee in Haiti, where you just get like a little taste of something very tropical, but without having to see, like, you know.
Sure.
Wait, but really, I'm just why?
Well, first of all, I generally don't love retreats where one has to travel a long way, especially to those places that you described, like Greece or
what about Tulum?
Costa Rica or Tulum, or like that has never intrigued me as a practitioner or as a teacher to go do.
It intrigues me as like an alcoholic, though.
Well, that's fair. And I just feel like, no, don't get me wrong. If someone was scheduling something for like fall of 2022 and just wanted to like just to lock a place down, so that they could run, like that would be a different thing. But to me, like, I don't know where we're going to be in October 2021. That feels like not.
You think it's optimistic?
I feel like that's really optimistic, especially since I forget which show I was listening to, but they had a panel of experts on, and the host, or it wasn't, he had interviewed all of the various experts out there, asking them for their best estimate as to when things would start to feel quote unquote normal. And the average of those estimates was like mid-September. So there were like some people saying it would be sooner and some people saying it would be like way, 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 way later. And it's hard. I mean, those are just people's best guesses, but I don't know that I would feel comfortable with international travel in October. And it just feels, and maybe it's not the scheduling of it. Maybe it's seeing the promotion, the active promotion of it, that feels a little odd. It's just like, wait, what? We're not there yet.
I don't know. I haven't seen many. So I saw one, but it was somebody that was doing it even during the full swing of the pandemic. And the whole idea was everybody gets tested and then goes basically in quarantine together on retreat semi-locally. And I thought for the people that like have the resources and time to do that, that's pretty badass. Like, yeah. If you can do that, that's neat. I haven't seen advertisements for that, larger vacation like thing. And I'm of two minds. One is, oh God, have I learned how short and strange life is? Yeah. That has been sort of one of my key, takeaways from this time, is how precious and fragile it all is. And so because of that, part of me really appreciates like the just grabbing it by the grundle and, you know, go do it, go be. If that's what brings you joy, if that's what helps you make some money, if that's what makes you happy, I guess go do it. I certainly, like, for example, if somebody knocked on my door and was like, Kate, we'd love to pay you $3,000 to travel to this lovely place. We're going to feed you. And all you have to do is wake up and teach, you know, maybe 2 times a day. I'd say yes, because I don't really have access to that kind of travel time-wise, financially quite.
Sure.
You know? So I think that there's part of me that's like, that thinks that that's a lovely, shiny new thing. Although in general, okay, so there's another thing I want to point out, and it's about attitudes around vacationing in general. And I am not directing this at you. So before you think this is a veiled comment at you, it's not. In my life, I have experienced two types of people. The first is the type of person that vacations to get away from labor and work. And sometimes that translates into beach locations or like resorts or places where your only work is to sit on the sand or by the pool and rest and, you know, consume fancy drinks and just unplug. And then there is the other group of people that says, no, vacations are for enrichment. They're to learn about other cultures and experience the world. And the people who are just going to resorts are white trash garbage. Do you know what I'm saying? And I think that it's like, there's actually some really interesting class codifications happening and how we approach leisure time. So if you have to save up money for 5 years to be able to take off time and you are deeply drained and tired, that resort might actually be the sounder choice, although it is not as highbrow. Because going on the other vacation, which is like, I'm going to learn and really, steep myself in this culture and become worldly and learn, takes a kind of effort. It's the kind of vacation you need a vacation from.
Sure.
So I'm trying to be thoughtful about my judgment of vacationing, because that's what we're talking about, is call it retreat. It's a vacation. We're talking about vacationing.
Well, that's the other thing that's always, I think I just have this reaction sometimes to retreat, whereas like I go on a retreat and I'm sitting mostly silent for a significant period of time in somewhere in Western Massachusetts or Vermont or, you know, like, to me, it's like, these things that get promoted, that a lot of times they're just a vacation with yoga.
Yes. Yes.
Which I have nothing wrong. I have no problem with that.
It's yoga camp vacation.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that. It's like a themed cruise. It's a Disney cruise, but it's yoga.
I just think we're not quite out of the woods yet that we can start that whole racket up again. It also, yeah, like the other thing that I will say is, from a business perspective, it's pretty much like the dumbest thing that you could do as a yoga teacher, because it never makes any money. You have to do the same retreat like 3 or 4 times before you see any profit on that.
No, wrong. The other way that it works is the first time you make a shitload of money because the place you found didn't know how much money you were asking, sure, of the students. So you make a fuckload of money the first time. They catch wind of the ticket price, and the next year they jack it up and you break even.
Yeah.
That's been the pattern I've seen with yoga teachers. They're like, I found this really cool place. They're undercharging me. But they will not continue to undercharge you. Yes. I don't know. There's people that do those things and make bank. Like, I have specific names, like, you know, that we both know that,
yeah,
you know, are making like 20 grand for leading a retreat.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't think we're out of the woods quite yet. That's just my feeling on that.
I don't know. I feel like it would be fine, like in October, to get on a plane if you have had your shot. Think of it this way. October, let's say you've had both your shots, because you have. Yeah. You get on a plane in October and you go, you fly, you land, and then you go to your resort where you see you're there with 15 other people who maybe have had their shots too. And maybe some haven't. What is the fear if you've been?
Well, I think it's less of fear and more of the X factor. Like, we don't know, are we all going to need boosters in the fall? Are we all going to need, like, is there going to be some, like there's so many unknowns that when I started seeing those pop up, I was just like, oh, how are we here yet? Like, this doesn't, again,
well, there's part of like the agoraphobe in you is like, no, there's stuff I'm enjoying about this. Or, I'm talking about myself right now, actually.
Yeah.
wait, we wouldn't be in such a rush to see each other. Are we sure it's safe? Because I don't know that I want to go out.
Yeah. Truth.
It does feel a little, I think maybe I could imagine an ad that would feel tone deaf.
Yeah.
Like, I could imagine an ad that felt hopeful and like responsible, which, you know, that sort of brings me to the other thing I want to talk about. What is the job of somebody that works in marketing for health and wellness? Not only what is the job, but what are the responsibilities and expectations and obligations around mores and ethos and ethics around marketing for yoga, meditation, arguably health and wellness entirely.
That is, I don't know. Meaning what?
Use every technique available, no matter the cost.
Or no matter what's being promoted. I think it partially depends on whether the person doing the marketing would consider themselves. Well, I guess I go back and forth on this. So I do think, like, when people who are very, very skilled at marketing come into specifically the yoga space, there, like I've had multiple situations where I felt like it was like, oh, we got to rein this in a little bit. This isn't like, we have to use the marketing skills within the context of yoga, as opposed to market yoga as a product, like it's a new clothing line or a new, you know, whatever. And
what happens if we don't do that?
Don't do what? Don't do which part of that?
What you're talking about when we pull yoga and apply the same principles that we would to other product and service marketing best practices. Like, what's the risk of that?
Well, I think the risk is that it depends on the user. Like, I could spin it one way and say that, no, you're really just figuring out how to tell folks why this experience, this educational experience, or this class, or this service is valuable, and you choose to engage with that service, and then, you know, like there's a way in which it is actually very, very simple and very But then there's also a way with all of this digital marketing on Facebook and Instagram and everything like that, that it gets a little squirrely. Like, just because someone said to me something, I don't know, said toilet paper in a text message, that all of a sudden I start getting ads for toilet paper on Amazon. Like, there's a simple marketing equation that is, I have this service. If we're really talking in the yoga space, I have a service that is worthy of value exchange, and I'm going to tell people about it through the avenues that are available to me. And then, but it's not quite that simple anymore as like buying an ad in a newspaper or like
putting up a fire. Arguably some of that is about to change with the iOS 14 update, in terms of our ability to target based on disclosed information and interests and even geography, which is good and bad, because it's going to make ads on Facebook and Instagram the way they were like 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And it was like, why am I getting an ad for, like, you know, mustache upkeep, although fairly, you know what I mean? Like, just like totally like off base targeting.
Yeah.
So we're going to return to that. It's going to hurt the user experience on these platforms across the board. But I think my larger question that I've been sitting with is, if you work in marketing, you have a choice, and you can use techniques that appeal to people's lesser angels, or you can use techniques that encourage progressive, healthy, inclusive mindsets. And I am of the philosophical beliefs that people want to be good. People are essentially kind. And if there's anything we've learned in the last 2 years, it's that especially I think in the yoga community, people are willing to take a hard look at issues of equity and racism and systemic imbalances across the board. And we have so much work to do that to lean on marketing techniques that appeal to ableist, racist tendencies is bad for business. But because you end up looking like Core Power. And how's Core Power doing?
Yeah.
You end up looking like Yoga Works. And how's Yoga Works doing?
Not so hot.
No. And so like you might not get as many clicks if you put like a fat Black woman in an ad as you would if you took a tattooed 90-pound hyper flexible former gymnast. But like you have to be at peace with what you're putting out there in marketing. You really do. And I don't sleep well at night if what I am promoting on behalf of a client is not in line with the value of what the client themselves is purporting to believe.
Sure. But so two questions there then is what, don't you think that in the mind of whoever is, or in the mind of whoever is producing the content of the marketing, that if they don't have a lens on issues of racism and ableism and homophobia and like transphobia and like all of it, that it's quite easy to fall into the pattern of the, oh, let's just slap a picture of a skinny white person in standing split on the,
They're evil.
Yeah.
No, they probably just don't know. But yeah, that's why I'm interested in the conversation about what is the responsibility of somebody who is at the helm of messaging for a brand. And every client that I've worked with, you know, over the last decade, I've had the opportunity to kind of remind them of that power of like, hey, you might think you are disempowered because what you're doing is creating content to get attention because you feel like you don't have enough of it. You don't have enough purchases. You don't have enough traffic. So sometimes advertisers are coming from this place of fucking like lack, but it's actually a place of privilege and power to be able to spend $5 on advertising and put your messaging and information in front of people. That's power and privilege. And I believe that we get to enact change as advertisers in a way that is authentic to the brands we work with. And we have to remind people, no, you don't have to use the same old stuff. Playbook. You shouldn't use the same old playbook. It's actually going to hurt you.
Yeah.
And I don't see a lot of people coming out of marketing school and marketing programs that like seem aware of that.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about like recent grads, not, you know, but just like across the board, it is interesting to me because I would think that there would be like a progressive streak, you know.
But then how do you balance that? Because so often
and I have to deal with like this roughly four times a year, I'd say, I come up against this.
So
it's not like singular, it's four times a year.
So then how do you also deal with the, like, it seems to me that there's a fine line, and maybe this is just in the sort of size and scope of the company or brand. But it does seem to me that the larger the operation, the easier it is for those attempts at using a different playbook to be seen as just, you know, a flash in the pan to prove to everybody that they're not
like pandering
racist or flash in the pan to prove to everybody. It's the pink washing of pride and like, you know, or like everybody doing these big, like Black History Month campaigns and then they're gone. All of that material is put away. There was some cartoon that I saw on Facebook where someone was like locking the key on all of the Black History material. It was like, we'll see you next February. But that happens like throughout the year. It's like we say like, okay, June is Pride Month, or, you know, that like, who knows who comes up with these arbitrary fucking things.
Oh, well, who? The World Health Organization came up with National Obesity Day, which happened.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
This is where I set myself on fire and go running.
So it really is. So I guess back to my question is like, well, what? Is there some fine line between that very clear sort of sense of pandering and like actually putting forth values that the folks at the helm?
Yes. This is it. You can't promote it if it's not there. You know what I mean?
Totally. Like, yes. Yes.
So for small, mid-size wellness company, to use, for example, stock photography to create the sense of diversity or representation, I think that's problematic. I guess I just am of the belief that people don't often know what their strengths are as a brand, as a company, as a studio. We have a hard time being reliable narrators of our own experience, sometimes with the thing that we have shepherded and brought into creation, because it's so close to us that we can't see it. So business strategists and marketing folks have an opportunity to guide business owners into seeing and reflecting back the thing that actually makes them deeply unique, which is usually something that is hiding right under their noses. It's like the unexpected inevitable. It's not looking like an echo of an Equinox or you know, Core Power or Lifestyle. It's just not.
But I think what you said about not being able, I forget the words that you use, but not being able to realize what your strengths are as a studio or as a brand, or even just as like an individuated teacher. I have felt that has been, and it's only been through people who are close to me sort of like hitting me over the head with it, that like I didn't realize what was valuable about Bow Street, because I was just so in the weeds of trying to figure out how to make it work. And so I did the only thing that I knew how to do, which was go teach more to try and make it work, go teach more elsewhere, because that was like a way to actually get money coming in the door. And that really stopped me. Now, mind you, the pandemic came along. So like, I'm not like, it's fine that everything unfolded the way that it, but I don't think that I would have, without the pandemic and the people who I have remained close with, both in practice and in just like, and in friendship, that I didn't realize that there were parts of that endeavor that went really, really, really well. Because all I could focus on was like the fucking bank account at the end of the day. So I think that's really a really, really important point, is that when you're in the weeds, especially something as where the overhead is so out of control, like a brick and mortar yoga studio is, it's just you end up pulling on threads to try and make something happen, but you just like you pull on every thread except the right one. Except the one that would actually like go somewhere. And and I think it's also tough because, you know, I don't actually see a lot of marketing out there where I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Well, because you wouldn't maybe associate it with marketing.
Precisely.
You would think it was maybe an article or just like a cool thing somebody's doing.
Yeah.
Good marketing is hidden inside, you know, the container of sharing valuable content.
Yeah.
I just got to let the dogs in. I don't know. You don't know it's marketing if it's good marketing.
Yeah.
You don't immediately see the seams.
Yeah.
You don't immediately see that it's a sponsored post.
Yeah.
You know, or that you've been delivered to a landing page. You just think, oh, okay, cool. This was easy for me to get connected and to do the value exchange with something that I actually value.
Yeah.
And I just won't be afraid anymore. And I never was, to be fair, in marketing, because you cannot assume that people, I think sometimes there's a fear of like, well, if we don't show this, such an opportunity for yoga teachers, especially individual yoga teachers, to be instruments of positive change. And I think sometimes that fear and self-loathing is what keeps yoga teachers pressing the same button to get the likes, you know, pressing the same trick, doing the same thing that's been done, because there's a fear that if they show the other thing, they're going to lose money. They're going to lose followers. They're going to lose love.
Yeah. I mean, if they showed the other thing, but also if they did the other thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know what? I saw this wonderful quote the other day. Somebody was like, hey. So if you're like 5 pounds overweight, talking about body positivity, you should probably like hand the mic over to somebody who actually experiences like, and it was talking about how especially white women are sort of co-opting the health at every size body positivity movement for bringing the attention onto to themselves. Like they'll be like, you know, I gained some weight and look, I've had a couple kids. Look at how my body's changed slightly. And how gracefully I'm navigating the inevitability of my, okay, you still look like fucking Hollywood. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And, but I really appreciate the, and I forget who it was, but the person that did it was themselves a able-bodied, thin, young white woman who was like, yo. And I appreciated that she was, you know, she was calling her own out. Because, you know, I don't want to be the like body positivity police. That's like, oh, no, you don't get to talk about that. But I'm glad someone else did. No. And it's true. It had been something that it was nagging me for a while and I couldn't put my finger on it because I really appreciated the fact that so many thin yoga teachers were finally talking about it at all. But then it sort of turned into like, oh, gross. You're just talking about how you went from a size like 4 to a size 6 and you had a kid and now you've got a stretch mark. eat me. Eat it. Because people who are in larger bodies have experienced the message there that they are unworthy of love. That they are unworthy of unconditional love. That they are unworthy of participation in romantic culture, unworthy of participation in movement, art, somatic culture, and that they are to hide in shame until they are fixed. And that is so different than your skinny ass having fucking three kids and having a couple stretch marks around your belly button. But look, you're still going to wear that bikini and drink wine on the beach. Eat me. I mean, I'm proud of you for doing that work, but don't take the mic away from the people who are like, hey, I have a right to like live. I have a right to be loved. Sorry. I just,
folks, this is what happens when we don't record for a while. Kate just like the rants just sort of store deep within her.
They do. And you know, I just, for all my fat friends out there, I fucking love you. It's a hard world and it's changing a little bit, and just keep taking pictures of your beautiful fat bodies. We need them. Ooh, go take that yoga teacher training. Go get the job. Go make your own freaking business online. Sell your own classes online. Don't give any money to a fucking middleman. For all my friends who are in disabled bodies, take pictures, take lots of them, share them, teach. You're worthy of unconditional love always. Every person that takes their first breath on this planet is worthy of unconditional love, romantic or otherwise. You belong here. And the fact that I come on this podcast and once in a while have to remind myself that it's okay to exist, because we're still swimming in circles of fucking self-loathing in the yoga community, is humiliating. Teachers that have been teaching for 30 fucking years that are ashamed that their body doesn't work the same, so they hide it from their students.
Yeah.
What on God's green earth are we doing? Stop teaching. Get the fuck out. Work your shit out. Do not work it out on your students. Work it out. We're all in failing bodies.
Yep.
Nobody's getting out of this shit alive. I think I should quit teaching yoga. And I mean this in a loving way. I've sort of like, I want to dance. I think I want to teach dance, Ryan. I want to wear singlets.
I think you should teach dance. I think that's a good plan. I struggle with that urge of not wanting to teach anymore. And when I say not wanting to teach, let me be clear. I mean, not wanting to engage in the group drop-in situation. I was hoping for a better word, but that's all I got. Because there is the thought that then follows as if, okay, well, if Kate stops teaching, and if I stop teaching, and if all of the people who think of this as something slightly different than just a, you know, than just an exercise class, then is the whole thing just going to become the thing that we think it's not? Like, is it just that, is the train moving at such a speed that, you know, if we hop off of it, this is a bad metaphor, that it's just gonna go to an inevitable conclusion, which is that we just have a bunch of studios and companies that look like the model of a Core Power or the model of a YogaWorks or Is the train already going so strongly in that direction that
it is. Yes, it is. We slow it down slightly. We are the hobos that are hanging onto the side, catching scraps. This is a terrible analogy.
This is what we should do. We need to rework this one.
Take it back into the shop. Pull it around. I think you're right. I think so. Yes. And I think about this all the time. I think about it both in the sense of my presence as a teacher at any studio. So this is not specific to the studio I teach at. This is just like my experience with the many studios I've taught at. I often feel like, just a little bit of a nod to the progressive extreme that wants a round, jolly teacher, you know. And some of that shit is in my head. And some of it is not. But if I don't do it, I don't see like a big line of people with the same values coming in after.
Yeah.
For example, if there were like, you know, two other people that maybe looked like me a little, or just didn't look like whatever, I'd feel more peaceful about, I don't know, doing something else. But it feels irresponsible to not take up space, because for so long, people that looked like me were told we're not allowed to be publicly physical because it's so disgusting. It is so shameful for a fat body to dance or move publicly that it feels really important for me to stay visible in that regard. But I just don't know what comes in its place. Like, we're always going to be, you know, prioritizing the hires of able-bodied, youthful white folks who are usually heteronormative presenting. It's right. I mean,
yeah.
Is that just because that's the bulk of people that take teacher trainings, or is it because why?
I mean, I don't know many. I don't know many trans non-binary folks who are comfortable setting foot into a yoga studio. And so, in many ways, the advent of this online format is quite useful in that regard. And I've seen folks become sort of more visible as more trans folks become visible as teachers through Instagram and social media, and I think that's really great. I think and then I think there's like another layer in terms of the, like, I always feel this bit of a, like, this weird negotiation, because a lot of the queer yoga spaces that I step into, my experience of being in another room with, or being virtual or in person, being in a room with other queer people practicing yoga is a valuable experience. And the yoga that is presented is usually either, I don't want to say that, is usually not resonant with the way that I practice. So it's almost like, in a perfect world, it would just be like, let's just all get together, which is, whether queer or otherwise, this is my preference anyway, is just to say to my friends, hey, we're all gonna practice yoga together at, you know, 6 o'clock on a Thursday, and no one's going to lead the class. it is just, everyone is coming together in the same space and rolling around on their mat and doing what feels helpful for them today, and we will set a timer and decide collectively how long we would like to practice, and decide whether there will be talking or no talking, and you know, set the parameters and go. That to me would feel very, very cool. But otherwise, it's just, it's, I don't know. I feel, I always feel sort of in conflict with those like affinity group, quote unquote, type spaces, because it's just like, sometimes the purpose isn't very well defined. Like sometimes the purpose is introducing new folks to yoga practice who might not otherwise feel welcome. And other times it's really just getting a group of folks with some element of shared identity in a space to take a class. You know, like it isn't always so clear what the purpose is around those aspects. And then also like specifically with like I just want to make sure that wherever I'm teaching feels welcome to as many folks as want to come in. Like it's not going to be perfect for everybody, but like I don't know. It's a hard thing, and it's not so tangible. I feel like there are certainly things that one can do in terms of the way that you teach, the way that you sort of are in the classroom, and that marketing that you put out and all of that. But some of it is just like about the work that the teacher is doing internally on a lot of their own shit. Like I don't think it's so tangible. Some of the things that make the classroom feel quote unquote inclusive. I think some of it is the sort of internal work that whatever the teacher is doing sort of resonating outward. And then, yeah.
There's this really beautiful poem I'm going to read you that sums up I used to have it committed to memory, but here we go. This poem is by James Wright, and it is called Lying in a Hammock at William Duffy's Farm in Pine Island, Minnesota. Over my head, I see the bronze butterfly asleep on the black trunk, blowing like a leaf in green shadow. Down the ravine behind the empty house, the cowbells follow one another into the distances of the afternoon. To my right, in a field of sunlight between two pines, the droppings of last year's horses blaze up into golden stones. I lean back as the evening darkness and comes on. I lean back as the evening darkens and comes on. A chicken hawk floats over looking for home. I have wasted my life. That's the end of the poem. One more time for those in the back. Over my head, I see the bronze butterfly asleep on the black trunk, blowing like a leaf in green shadow. Down the ravine between the empty house, the cowbells follow one another into the distances of the afternoon. To my right, in a field of sunlight between two pines, the droppings of last year's horses blaze up into golden stones. I lean back as the evening darkens and comes on. A chicken hawk floats over looking for home. I have wasted my life. arguably one of the most important poems. Do you see the crazy look in my eyes?
Yes.
So for me, that poem is like a celebration of a wasted life and also the realization and the admonition of a wasted life. And sometimes I really feel that with you and I.
So the purpose of this was to say that we're wasting our life.
We could have done some real good on this planet, Ryan.
We could have.
We could have. We could have helped people, like, meaningfully, measurably.
Yes.
There's still time, though. That's the thing. There's still time, question mark?
Question mark.
I want to be of use.
Yeah.
Mary Oliver, another poet I really like, speaks of being of use, to be of use. And then there's the awful rowing towards God, which is not... Mary Oliver. It's Anne Sexton. Anyways. So next steps are, in general, as follows. When in doubt, you just keep showing up. When you're tired, rest. And let's stop making decisions based on 1940s North American capitalist structures.
Mm-hmm.
And rest is sacred because overwork is killing us.
Yeah.
That's kind of where my head's at. And get your fucking shot. It's not my business. You make your own choice, but I'm going to get it.
Yep.
And maybe I'm an idiot. Of course I think about it. Of course I think that, like, whoa, I'm going to get. Here's the thing. Whenever I have those thoughts, I think about Seattle. I think about Portland, Oregon, where there was an outbreak of the smallpox in the communities that went strict anti-vax. And I think about how different fundamentalist religious organizations that steer away from that, how hard they have suffered in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And I wonder who is allowed to opt out and who is encouraged to opt out and why.
Yeah.
And is Hillary Clinton eating babies in the basement of a pizza shop, Ryan? Is that right? Did I get it right?
I don't think you got it right, but the answer is no.
Okay.
So.
But at least everybody's favorite Italian dad is a total creep. Oh my God.
Precisely. That's a great note to end on.
Oh, it makes my underboobs itch. This has been Unrolled.
We'll see y'all soon. Bye.
Bye.
How do I stop it?
Turn it off, Ryan.